episode 46 of Understanding Latin American Politics, the podcast. I'm Greg Weeks, a political scientist at the University of North Carolina at Charlotte. And today I have a bit of a change of pace. I am talking with Isabel Manassian. She's an editor at Lookout Landing, which is a Seattle Mariners site, a contributor for La Vida Baseball, and then also the Hardball Times. So, Isabel, thanks a lot for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm thrilled to bring perhaps a little levity to this.
Yes. I got an idea for doing this because I had read an article that she wrote about the Caribbean Winter Leagues for the 2018 Hardball Times Annual. And since spring training is coming up, then it figured like this was a good time to just go ahead and throw some baseball into my podcast. So it's taken 46 episodes to do that. So why don't we just start with, if you could tell me what prompted you to write an article on the Winter Leagues.
Sure. And I'll point out, too, this is exceptionally timely because last night they had the championships for the Serie del Caribe, which is their kind of Caribbean series.
Yes, and I was anticipating one of the other questions because I was going to say, like, how little news it got.
Yeah.
So anyway, though, we can get to that. But what what prompted you in the first place to write it?
So I kind of, within my baseball writing sphere, specialize in writing about Latin American baseball players and the history of Latino players in the U.S. And initially, actually, I wanted to dig deeper into the Winter Leagues and see if there was a compelling story, if there was a team that was kind of going to make an interesting play, explore the stories more, because that's a big part of my passion for this, is taking some of these stories that don't get a lot of mainstream play and sharing them with a broader audience.
And how'd you get into that interest in general?
I was a baseball fan from the time I was very young, and also really loved learning Spanish as a language. When I first started learning languages, I liked Latin American history, and I ended up actually writing my thesis. I graduated 2 years ago, and I wrote my thesis about Roberto Clemente and his portrayal in the American media.
Nice.
So this was a very natural progression.
That's perfect. That's actually, I went into political science, but that was the same thing. I learned Spanish first, and that's what propelled all the rest afterward.
Exactly. By learning the language, so many doors open up, and because all of a sudden you realize, there's so much more information to be had that's not simply reliant on who's able to speak in English.
Right. Well, then sometime else I'll have you back and you can talk about Roberto Clemente's portrayal in the U.S. media, which actually sounds interesting.
I would love
that. Now, you, in your article, you say that this topic in general is understudied. Why do you think that's the case?
I think that, unfortunately, there's a pretty unfair discrepancy between the information that gets shared between the South and Central American baseball and U.S. baseball. So a lot of information gets sent down to them, but not all that much information there gets sent back up to us. And part of that is a translation issue. It's a matter of American sports writers not necessarily going out of their way or not being able to translate Spanish in the same way. I wish I had a better answer for it. It's also something where, I don't know, I find it very compelling, but that's not necessarily the case for everyone.
And I was thinking about whether this is sort of a nativism instinct that we have in the United States, where we're just like, baseball elsewhere is less interesting, because, and we call all the championships, we call them world champions. And I don't know. I just wonder why we seem to just care so little about the same sport elsewhere in the world.
It's interesting. I do wonder if it's a result of this kind of blind patriotism, as we call baseball America's game, right? But if you look at the way baseball evolved and the way it traveled, within a handful of years of it, quote unquote, being invented here in the States, it was being played down in Cuba, it was being passed through to the Dominican, to Costa Rica, Puerto Rico, and within less than a decade of the U.S. establishing their professional league, Cuba had established a professional league there. And so it really evolved in a joint way, but for whatever reason, we have seized on it as America's pastime.
Yeah, and it's also, as I was thinking about this, and maybe I'm getting too far afield, but, you know, if you think about it in kind of immigration terms, is that we have this discomfort with this, what we see as this outside culture encroaching on us. So I even thought of like bat flipping. Everybody goes insane about bat flipping. Why? Because we don't do bat flipping.
Exactly. That's such a good example. That was just as like a brief aside. I wrote my thesis, or I had started writing my thesis right when Jose Bautista had done that epic bat flip. And it served as the perfect kind of introduction to how we receive more passionate ways of playing, which is how Latinos play the game. They play with a lot of passion. That's kind of their character. But I think that as we watch the percentage of players of Latino heritage grow in the majors, I'm hoping that we'll start to see a broader acceptance and a broader interest in where these players are coming from, what their upbringing is like, what the game is like down there. And we're seeing that a little bit. So one of the sites I write for, La Vida Baseball, they launched in March, I believe, of last year, and have had tremendous success because they filled this niche of Latino baseball content, thinking about the past, thinking about the present, looking at the future. And it's been spectacularly well received. It was just a matter of taking the initiative to build that.
And is all of that in English?
It is in English, but it's got Spanish kind of smattered throughout. And what I love is that when they do their interviews, they conduct them, or they give the option, I suppose, of the players answering in Spanish or answering in English, and then they translate it for their English audience.
Okay.
Which I think is really important. ESPN also, they have right around the same time La Vida launched, ESPN launched a kind of Latino-focused side site, I suppose, that features full translations of posts about Latino players or about kind of Latino baseball events.
Okay. I'll have to check that out. I didn't know that was there.
Yeah. And that's one of those things. It's there. It's great. It's not getting nearly as much publicity as it deserves.
Yeah, and that brings me to the next question, kind of what you mentioned before, is that the Caribbean series just ended, and it was this huge deal. Puerto Rico won. It's like, you know, Puerto Rico rising up, that sort of message. But in the U.S., I was sort of, why don't we pay attention to it, especially because right now there's nothing going on elsewhere. And I literally, I'm a Padres fan, so I hear way more about Eric Hosmer and whether he should get 8 years or whatever than I do about what is obviously this incredibly exciting series. So, like, you know, why did that just not get any more attention?
I wish I had a good answer. Like, the Puerto Rican team winning the series last night, is the kind of thing where if it was an American team in, I don't know, in the Olympics or like playing in a major World Cup event, they'd write books, they'd write novels, they'd create movies based on it. It's this incredible story of, like, they had a shortened season, most of their country still without power, the stories are incredible. And I don't know why it hasn't taken hold here in the same way. Like you said, it has been a really dull off season. There's no baseball. But I think part of the problem is that you grow to care about the teams and you grow to care about the players, but it's very hard to care about them when there's not a lot of information that's easily accessible. So like the MLB has a site for the Caribbean series, and ostensibly they have sites for the leagues, but as I was writing this article, it's terrible. There's little to no information. It's all very difficult to navigate. Originally, I was going to write a much more in-depth article and realized as I was researching, there's no just basic guide for the winter leagues, which is what this piece ended up being.
Yeah.
But I think that's a testament to why there isn't nearly as much attention, because there's not as much information available.
Right. Now shifting gears a little bit to the more of the content of the article that you wrote, this is more of a baseball question. Assuming money isn't really a reason anymore, meaning that players don't really need to go there to make some extra money during the winter, is it even a good idea for major leaguers to keep playing there nonstop? Or, I mean, do many even do it anymore? I wonder whether that also has something to do with it, where we don't see the stars traveling there.
I think that's a really, really good point. Particularly in the last, I would say, 5 to 10 years, there's been a huge drop off in the number of kind of major league stars who will return to their home countries or will travel down there and play. I can't think of any major leaguer now who plays a full winter league series down there.
Yeah.
I know a handful will go down for a couple of weeks, and it's a good way to kind of shake the dust off of the long off season. I actually did an interview recently with the Mariners backup catcher, because he was down in the Dominican. He played for the second place team. But he was only down there a couple weeks and then had to go back. Part of it, there's a very real injury risk.
Right, right.
And unfortunately, also depending on where these players are going, there's a safety risk. A couple years back, Wilson Ramos was kidnapped while he was playing. And recently, I'm kind of getting ahead of our topics here, but
yeah, that's okay.
Recently, the mother of one of the Pirates catchers was kidnapped in Venezuela as well. So it's something that I think the players have to weigh pretty heavily, unfortunately. I don't think it's something that they should stop doing, but it is a consideration, especially when you consider how much their livelihood is tied to simply being healthy, being able to play.
Right, because as you note, Ozzie Guillen, who played there a lot, then later came out and said, I don't think anybody should go there at all.
Exactly.
And I guess that's just as the money has gotten bigger and bigger and bigger, there's just too much at stake.
Which is a shame, but I think the leagues can flourish and the leagues hold interest without having American major leaguers part of it. I do think that is a good answer for why there isn't as much interest, why we're not paying as much attention.
Yeah, I was thinking that too. Because you don't necessarily know who the players are. So thinking though about Venezuela, because this at least gives me the opportunity, I can then say that I've had politics in the podcast. Politics definitely enters into it, and that's especially true with Cuba and Venezuela. And now I know you didn't necessarily focus on this, but how much has the current Venezuelan crisis affecting winter baseball in general? I mean, how much has it gone on, et cetera?
Excuse me, sorry. Getting over that cold.
No, that's okay.
So as I mentioned, it has, I think, radically changed who is willing to play down there.
Yeah.
So players are not participating in the Venezuelan leagues to the degree that they were. It's caused a lot of stress, from what I know, in talking to a couple of the players from Venezuela. They're worried about their families, and that manifests itself within the game. It's hard not to if you're concerned about your family. And in terms of it affecting winter baseball, it didn't dramatically change the league this year.
Okay.
But in the past, the leagues have been shut down because of strikes. The leagues have been shut down 1 year because of Trujillo. Politics play a very big role. I think that politics and sports, especially baseball, down in Latin America, are about on par in terms of the sway that they have.
Right. Well, and then Cuba, obviously, was as you can't get any more radical
exactly.
the way that it's now sort of disconnected.
Exactly. It was very striking, actually. There was a picture of the two players on, I believe, the Dominican team, but it mentioned in the caption below that they were both Cuban, very proudly Cuban.
Okay.
But because they had defected, it was two prospects who were in the minor league systems right now. But because they had defected, they weren't able to represent their team.
Right. In the article, you mentioned how the leagues were important racially. Talk just a little bit about that.
Sure. So before I really get into this, I have to give a plug for Adrian Burgos Jr. He is a professor at the University of Illinois and wrote a book called Playing America's Game. I imagine you've heard of it, read it. If not, I'd highly recommend it. He's one of the foremost Latin American baseball scholars. And, oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, please.
He's an editor for La Vida Baseball and has done a lot of work kind of exploring this concept, but essentially the winter leagues were the first opportunity for non-white players to play equally.
Mm-hmm.
So you still, back before the leagues were integrated in the U.S., white players would travel down because it gave them the opportunity to play baseball in the off-season. But at the same time, players from the Negro leagues would also travel, and there was no segregation down in the winter leagues, so they would all play on the same level, and it was a really powerful opportunity for these black players to recognize and compete at the highest level that they could, and to watch their skills stand up and oftentimes surpass those of players who were playing in the majors at that point.
And then also, I hadn't really thought of this, about how that meant there was an outlet for Negro League players in the United States. Somewhere else they could play at a high level of competition because they weren't allowed to do so in the United States.
Exactly. It was the competition. It was also quite simply the finances. They were just barely making money, scraping by during the season in the Negro Leagues, and they had to come up with some sort of job in the off season. Some worked kind of traditional gigs, and others traveled down and played in the winter leagues. And that
yeah.
was the way they were able to make their money.
And it occurred to me too that the rise of the number of Latino players in the United States, you know, many of whom may have come at some point from these leagues, we could see that as racially important now, because that's what I was thinking of the bat flipping and everything, is that Major League Baseball has traditionally been sort of the crusty old white guy who says, this is what rookies need to do, this is how players need to act in the clubhouse. And now all of that is being, and I mean, I think that's tied to race, and is being very seriously challenged by all of these new ways of behaving and of playing baseball.
Very much so, as the major leagues here have become progressively more Latino. The league itself has been slow to shift and to accept other ways of playing the game, quite simply. We're seeing it slowly, but that backlash from Jose Bautista is such a good example of what happens when this kind of crusty, like you said, old holdout of former American ideals crashes into this new America that we have.
I always sort of laugh because people will say, well, you know, this is just them being passionate. And it's like, it's sort of weird to think that passionate is somehow a problem.
Exactly. It's.
So in a sense, you're supposed to hold it all in.
Yeah, in many ways, the unwritten rules of baseball were written well before the leagues were integrated.
Oh, right,
when it
right.
was exclusively a white man's sport. And even today, we're seeing a lot of that still. We're watching it be challenged progressively, but it's very slow to change.
Right. Now, with that, we are out of time. I've been talking to Isabel Manassian, who is editor at Lookout Landing, a contributor for La Vida Baseball and for the Hardball Times. I should say, too, you can find her at Twitter at 95 Coffee Spoons, whatever that means.
Elliot is my favorite poet.
Okay. Isabel, again, thank you so much for taking some time out.
Thank you so much for having me on. I love talking about this.